You are listening to An Awful Lot of Running, a Doctor Who podcast.
Welcome, my children, to An Awful Lot of Running, a Doctor Who podcast. I am one part of your hosting team. My name is... I can't keep up. My name is Jack, and I am the Oob fan of this team here. And joining me, as always, for this very smoggy edition, is the... Ukon or Alcon? I can't even remember this mistake. Okay, the Alcon to my King Vampire. All I know is glam rock, you know, state of K. Anyways, joining me as always, it's only published author Robin Foe.
Yes, Master, I am here to join the podcast, and I am not doing that voice for the rest of the night, either.
Well, that's good. No. Keep it up. It's interesting, though, that you choose to use your normal voice and then shift into the one you put on for the podcast.
You heard it right here, folks. That's the true voice of Robin Foe, published author of bloody comic or bloody books or whatever.
Bloody comics, bloody books, terribly British. That's very good for Halloween. Yeah, it's very good for Halloween. You know, we want things bloody, don't we? You know, and you know what? Let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's peek behind the curtain. Robin is going to be away.
At least it's
3 weeks, isn't it? You're going on a nice holiday.
I am doing the most scariest thing one can do in Halloween: meeting your partner's parents for the first time. No, I'm incredibly looking forward to it. Some gorgeous sun in the Philippines. Slightly bricking it, of course, of meeting the family for the first time. But they've been lovely and supportive, and I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure they're not going to be anything terrifying or turn out to be a horror movie in itself. Though,
listen
to this podcast now.
If you get out there and you start getting midsummer vibes, like, I'm just saying. You know.
That was the example I was thinking of, but I was just like, nope.
I'm like, the second weird stuff starts happening, you book it out of there, okay? Be like, honey, I love you. I'll see you at home.
Yeah, I'm not being the stereotypical horror movie protagonist, you know. I'm not staying around. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge.
I'm just saying, you know, a lot of these horror movies would end better if they started throwing punches earlier and started running, like, earlier as well. I'm just saying, you know, Conjuring, if some demon starts coming towards my face, like something dressed or not, I'm going to start punching that thing in the fucking face. I am. I'm just going to, and it's going to be, you know, just be like, bam! You know, they're like, ah, and they're holding their arms up at, you know, things coming towards them. I'd just be like,
it doesn't matter if the thing's invisible either. All you do is wave your arms about like two windmills, and if they get in the way, it's
unfold. I'm just going to stand here and flail my arms around, and if you come into that space and you get hit, that's your fault. And meanwhile, the guy says, well, I'm just going to stand here with this knife and stab into the air, and if you come into my area and get stabbed, that's your own fault.
And they just slowly get closer and closer towards each other.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
But no,
stuff.
Seriously, like the first instant there was like anything spooky or like creepy happening, I would be booking it out of there. I'd just be like, yeah, no. Like, and obviously, you know, it wouldn't make a good horror movie, does it? Because you got to have it build and build and build. But the second the dog starts barking weirdly, I'm fucking out of there, you know?
I mean, even that first night when the child is having nightmares or is floating in the air, you're like, honey, you know, I know we paid like the mortgage for this and everything, but shit's whack. Let's get the fuck out.
Yeah, like seriously. Because let's face it, you know, it can only end badly, really, can't it? I mean, yeah, I know sometimes horror films end in a good way and, you know, people get off. But in my mind, you know, there's two scenarios. Either I get the fuck out of there because there's actual, like, shit going on, or I call in Mystery Incorporated and they sort it out and it's just, you know, Old Man Withers.
Really, just damn straight. Which, for you listening by now, if you know, haven't read the title of this episode, you probably gathered that this is a very spooktacular Halloween-themed episode. Both of us, we absolutely love Halloween.
And we are, look, as I was saying, we're recording this in advance. We are. So, Robin, what did you think of the Centenary or Power of the Doctor?
Yes, I...
Because you've totally seen it, haven't you?
Oh, you know, of course, my real opinion is, Jack, what the hell did I just watch? I thought The Timeless Children was the worst thing I ever watched, but this?
And now do the best one ever. Go on. Give me that one too.
God, Jack, like, Flux was amazing, but for them to follow up with that and to tie in every single loose end they've had these last two seasons was just absolutely amazing.
sorry, I couldn't.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's too harsh.
That was me being too harsh there, I'm sorry.
Same, but I really want it to be good. I really, really do.
Oh yeah, I hope it's really good. You know, let's go from there. And obviously, at this point, when this comes out, I'll probably have seen it. You know, you might not have because you'll be, you know, on the other side of the world. But still, you know, and you know, yeah. Anyway, this is a very spooktacular version of the podcast, and. You know, we talked about this before, where it's like, well, we can't really talk about anything that's actually happening in our lives right now, or anything in the fandom, or any build-up or anything, because it's, by the time this comes out, it'll be really, like, irrelevant, or, like, past the fact. So, I'm sorry, everyone, but, Robin, I don't care what you've been doing recently, or what you've enjoyed. I'm not speaking to you about that. So,
no.
So there.
that's quite all right, Jack, because I don't care about what you've been doing either. In fact, I want to get onto this topic of the evolution of...
Why did you say that?
Because outside of the podcast, I'm an absolute mean bastard and everyone should know this.
This is it. This is, you know, 20, 30 episodes in. This is when the mask finally slips. This is where he reveals him to be a villain. As he is a villain, a murderer, yeah. Well, this is when he comes out as the Halloween villain. But no, Robin, go on. You talk about you lead into what we're going to be talking about today on the tonight.
Ooh, tonight indeed, boys and girls, gather round for the evolution of horror in Doctor Who, and then we just post credit add in like a bunch of thunder and. Dogs like howling and everything. I'm sure that would be too much.
I will totally do that.
Oh, thank you, Jack. let us begin with, first off, Doctor Who and horror have evolved since the series first began. But to really delve deep into the subject that has kept children and adults alike hiding behind their sofas for years, we must first take a trip inside the TARDIS and travel back in time. So, Jack, if you will kindly put on your overly long scarf, I will grab my question mark umbrella, and we shall pop inside the TARDIS and enter to the year 1963. It is a time of peace and free love for the hippies. The Beatles begin to steal hearts and charts as the music flood the radios. And the day right after the JFK assassination, a brand new science fiction show was first aired on BBC. Doctor Who. Now, of course, the
Never heard of it.
Yeah, no. I don't know why I'm bringing it up either, but eh, I guess you could say it was a ghost of the past. The series was an instant hit with its combination of sci-fi and educational learning. With the concept of being able to travel to any time, anywhere, it was after visiting ancient cavemen that audiences and Whovians alike were introduced to a new horror that would change TV and Doctor Who forever. The Daleks. Which, I mean, come on. What is there to say about the Daleks? Mechanical beings devoid of all emotion except for hate. The Daleks were distinctly scary. But why are they so scary? Jack, what are your opinions?
Motherfuckers walked up with a fucking script. Like, what are you doing, mate? Like,
dude, when I said Halloween is one of my favourite times of year, I went in. I did.
Yeah, you did. You went in for this, mate. But yeah, no, yeah, beautifully said all that, I have to say straight away. I can really only really add to it by saying that, you know, Doctor Who and horror are sort of intrinsically there to get like intrinsically linked, you know, from the beginning. You know, you could even say in An Earthly Child there's a sense of horror there, that you have Ian and Barbara going to the junkyard to see, you know, try and, you know, see what's happening with Susan, and there's a, you know, there's a horror around the character of the Doctor because there's this mystery around him. We're not sure really what his intentions are, who he is as a character. But and obviously that, you know, evolves into then, you know, the actual story in An Earthly Child, you know, parts 2, 3, and 4, where, you know, you have the caveman adventure, which, let's be honest, the best part of An Earthly Child is the first episode. But yeah. You know, but then you still, you know, you do have a horror, because you do, again, you're not quite sure about who this character, the Doctor, is. You know, there's even a moment there where they're traveling with these cavemen, and one of the cavemen is lagging behind because he's injured, and the Doctor picks up a rock and starts going towards him, and is only stopped by Ian then. Which is, you know, and we're left to question, like, what? How far would the Doctor have gone then to?
Oh, jeez, you know, I completely forget about that moment.
Yeah, so like, you know, there's a horror there about it, you know, and obviously, you know, there are conversations to be had about how the characters of Ian and Barbara really are the ones that make the Doctor the Doctor, and it's their influence that make in this sort of jaded old cynic from Gallifrey into the Doctor that we know and love today, into the hero, you know. And part of that as well is, as you say, the horror and the realism of the Daleks when he comes across them. These creatures obsessed with purity and, you know, hatred and seeing themselves above, you know, other people, you know. So Tories, I mean, the Daleks, you know, just... you know, they're that, you know, and it's, they were very much created by Terry Nation in a response to the first, into the Second World War, sorry, because they are, you know, they're sort of the Band-Aid off. They're space Nazis. Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because this was only like maybe a few years ago. This being like, oh, this was 1960. This is 1963. And
yeah, 1963 this came out, yeah.
And the world war ended in 1946. Nazis are still...
45.
Then I've got a very terrible Wikipedia entry. Thanks, Wikipedia. yeah, like, same thing. It's only ended just like a few years ago. So these guys popping up, like, yeah, Nazism is still fresh in people's minds. And I think that is very much in tune with familiar horror, something that people can latch on to and immediately recognize and immediately associate with something and go, oh, that's where this horror comes from.
Yeah, because let's face it, people, Doctor Who has always been political. It has always been PC. Well, parts of it have always been PC. You know, we don't talk about blackface and yellowface. That's Oof. Not. We don't condone no. that. We don't condone it in any way. No. And it's really awkward. It's really awkward when it shows up in Classic Who. Anyway. Yeah, I think there's so many levels as well to the horror of the Daleks. Mm. That yes, you have the relatability of them being, you know, they're a Nazi insert, aren't they? Yeah. You know, they are. Let's face it, you know, and then you have the horror of the fascism behind them. Mm. You know, you have and then you also have the horror of how intrinsically powerful they are as well as a force of nature. Yeah. You know, and how they always come back, they always return, which in itself is harrowing for our own reality, because we look at the world and we see fascism, you know, we hope to have stamped it out in World War II, but no, it comes back, and it comes back, and it comes back, and the Daleks are, you know, endlessly relevant today, because that is the case, you know, even in, you know, first world countries in the world, fascism is very much there.
I think another thing that really is like a focus in the 1960s amongst a lot of their horror seen in movies and especially in Doctor Who, is also unknown horror. There's this idea of taking something and making it so, well, alien. Like, what do you do when you face this creature, which is this mechanical menace, this dome-like structure with very kind of gun-like appendages coming out of it? Like, that is such an off-worldly design. Mm-hmm. And
it's the voice as well that give it, you know, because they're shouting, you know, and you can understand why, you know, you can understand when you watch it back now why there was this, you know, Dalek mania and why people love them, because people do love a good villain, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, but then also you can also understand the whole hiding behind the sofa thing. You know, of actually being scared, you know, because, and it's great as well, because I know obviously Sidney Newman, when he came up with the idea of Doctor Who, one of the first things he said was no bug-eyed monsters. But, you know, it was supposed to be an educational show where they go through time and space to different periods. But God bless her, Verity Lambert, you know, she knew that this show is not going to survive unless we put in something like the Daleks. And look, you know, it became a hit because of them. And so they'll always be intrinsically linked. And, like, you know, horror in Doctor Who has evolved in such a sense and in so many different ways, but it has, it's always been there, you know, it's always been there. And because, it's a time old thing, and it's relevant even now. It's why we have things like Five Nights at Freddy's and children watching things because they're, you know, when they're too young to watch it.
Yeah.
Children like to be scared.
Oh, they love it.
They do. They enjoy it. You know,
God, the number of times I see children walking around with Five Nights at Freddy's t-shirts or walking around with Poppy Playtime toys. And it's like, what the fuck? Why are you so much braver than I was at your age?
Motherfucker here hasn't even watched Torchwood yet.
Yeah. Wow, throw me under the bus there. But yeah, this is true.
I have to bring it up every time until you watch it.
I'm going to watch it at some point. I really am. But carrying on, I very much think that unknown horror was a hugely popular genre of horror back in the day. You can see this in examples like The Blob, for example, back in the time, which is just a giant killer blob, you know. But then I think we also, during the 60s, saw a real rise in both familiar and unfamiliar horror, with the likes of both The Village of the Damned and, by the end of the year, the groundbreaking Night of the Living Dead, which that in itself is a classic of horror and how it reinvents the undead. And yeah, this trend of unknown horror combined with the familiar would continue throughout the years in Doctor Who, with the likes of giant ants, for example, because you got to have the giant ants in 1960s Monster Fest. Come on.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the Planet of Giants.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, of course, we led up to another mechanical baddie and favourite, the Cybermen.
Yeah, who, in my mind, lend themselves the best to horror in Doctor Who, personally. Because, yes, you have the body horror aspect, which in itself is, for me, is a really big... Like, that's a massive source of horror for me. The idea that I could be intrinsically changed and, or just, you know, completely changed and there is no way to reverse that, you know? That is, you know, you're left as this just, you're left, you know, as a machine, you know? And I know it's jumping forward, but look at something like, you know, World Enough and Time and the Doctor Falls, where, you know, you have the... You have the little speaker boxes which are turned off, and Bill turns it on, and it's pain, 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 kill me, kill me. Like, oh my, like.
The Cybermen are amazing, and that's the thing, like, the first appearance, I watched 10th Planet, like, a month or two ago, absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great serial. I thought it was so well done. And, you know, they are pretty damn intimidating when they first show up. But they really go into the roots of the body horror in later Who, to the point where it's almost retconned in a way that very kind of cheap costume design that they have, which maybe originally was meant to be metal, we now view as kind of like the bandages of a patient. And it's just, oh, I love that kind of clever retconning. That's so good.
And I again, and I've spoken about it before, I know we both have, and I love the Cybermen, there are other designs I love, but that one, the 10th Planet, the, you know, the Mondasian Cybermen design from the world, from World Enough and Time and Doctor Falls, that's my favourite. Because in my mind, that's the scariest, because they're so close.
It's an uncanny valley.
But they are so changed. It's you know, and, you know, it played into the time in 1966 when it came out. It was coming into the time where it was playing into this national fear of, you know, cosmetic surgeries and also of, you know, of technology itself advancing and what have you. And this sort of, like, you know, this sort of fear that people are going to be left behind with this, and, you know, people are going to be, you know, absolutely changed by it. And, you know, I think there's a, you know, there's, I think there are a lot of, there are more worse Cyberman stories than there are good ones. And, you know, certainly when you get to the Cybermen you see in sort of Earthshock or Attack of the Cybermen or Silver Nemesis, you know, where they're going, excellent. Maybe they're not quite as scary as they but started off. But there's still an element to them. And I'd certainly say probably, maybe, you know, maybe an Earthshock more than, you know, the other ones. But I think as well it's the lack of emotion as well, which, you know, those Cybermen in the Fifth Doctor and Seventh Doctor's era on TV, they're very emotional, you know, because you have, again, you literally have them, you know, they're talking like the Darth Vader, going, David Banks there doing his, you know, beautiful Shakespearean acting as a Cyberman. Excellent. Doctor.
Beautiful. I'm so glad that you've been hitting these points with both the Cybermen and the Daleks. They're quintessential Doctor Who. And they're quintessential horrors in their own elements. Like, the absolute wonderful stuff. Tell me, Jack, are you ready to pop back inside the TARDIS and travel a few more years into the future?
Oh, let's do it. Go on then, let's do it.
You'll obviously add in the TARDIS sound effect right here, you know, all the chimes and everything as we travel through time.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
now let's travel forward in time. As the years pass, so have people and their fears. By the 70s and 80s, monster movies and subsequently monsters were beginning to be more and more seen as, unfortunately, gimmicky or unfrightening to some. While the xenomorph from Alien was iconic, the added cost of making a convincing monster, and not, say, the comedically bad design of the giant buzzard monster from The Giant Claw, which, if you haven't seen that design, look up The Giant Claw, you will have a laugh just seeing how awful that is, was a little much for some studios to stomach, especially when a cheaper and more effective option was available. This clone approach was definitely eyed up by the BBC when it came to Doctor Who, for indeed the monsters of this time began to take on more of a humanoid appearance, I would say. I would agree with that.
Yeah, certainly, you know, like, the first time I ever been scared of Doctor Who was before The Empty Child, Robin, before that even.
Oh, really?
It was catching footage from Spearhead from Space, which is the very first John Pertwee story. With the Autons, with the shop window dummies, just there.
Yeah.
And then stepping out the glass and gunning people down, because they lost something in New Who, because they just have, like, you know, they just have a blank face. They do like real shop window dummies.
Yeah.
But in classic Who, and certainly in Spearhead from Space, they have this sort of maniacal grin and these weird sort of painted eyes as well. It's just, you know, and I found that scary as all hell, you know, as a child. You know, the idea that something like that, so much so that I did actually find, like, shop window dummies, and I still kind of do now, a little bit creepy, you know?
I mean, it's that idea of taking something familiar and making it scary. Familiar horror does have its intentional roots in our everyday lives, to the point that, oh shit, these mannequins can come to life and just kill everyone that I know and love. That is inherently scary.
Absolutely, and that ties so into, and I know it's jumping forward again, but that ties so right into what Stephen Moffat does with his RTD era scripts. You know, he ties into that, you know, and sometimes the episodes will be big and what have you, but no, it's tying into, you know, Empty Child. You have a scary child, you know, you just have a child looking for his mummy, which everyone can identify with.
Yeah.
Girl in the fireplace, you have a monster under the bed, you know, with the ticking as well, you know, which is saying, blink, you have monsters that you can't blink, you looking at, you know, you have the iconic weeping angels coming out of there. Silence in the Library, creatures in shadow that will get you.
Classic,
you know?
Absolute classic.
And, you know, and he pulls a lot of that into his own era as well. But, you know, in my mind, his best uses of a horror were definitely those RTD era scripts, you know?
And before I go any further, I just want to iterate. I love a good monster. I fucking love monsters in general. Who doesn't love a good boogeyman, a good werewolf or something? But there is definitely, in my opinion, and I don't know if you agree with this, Jack, I think that if something is especially quite humanoid, I think we can instantly recognize it more, and that kind of unsettledness about it, that uncanny valley of things that makes it even more horrible.
Yeah, I think you know, having like a humanoid part to it can definitely make it scary. Because, like, you know, there are monsters which I definitely think are scary looking, but they have, you know, there is a humanoid part to it. And it is, it's that uncanny valley. It's that, and it's the same idea with the Cybermen, where it's like, it's so close to us, but then it's so far as well.
And, you know, the reason I bring this up is because during the 1970s, 80s, whether they wore a hockey mask or a striped jumper, humanoid killers devoid of emotion were the popular trend at the time. And you can really see these comparisons in the Uncanny Valley designs of the Autons, as you so brilliantly brought up. And you can even see it in something like, I would say, the Sea Devils, which I think are a great combination of both humanoid and monster. Now, the Sea Devils actually provided another great horror that was becoming popular at the time.
And that, sorry, what monster did you say again, sorry?
Oh, the Sea Devils.
Hang on. One more time, sorry, what was it?
The Sea Devils.
There we go.
Just get out of your system, Jack.
I had to. The second you said it, I was like, motherfucker, I'm doing it.
Oh, you've completely distracted the teacher now, Jack. Badu,
sorry, back sir, in sorry, the corner. Sorry, sir. What was the monster again? What was the monster again?
Well, as I was saying, the sea devil.
So yeah, the uncanny valley of the sea devils. Yeah, you were saying.
I'm just waiting for that sound effect. I have.
I'm done. It's two. It's fine. Two.
But you know, I think that the sea devils not only were they. Now I'm just imagining them with like a Mickey Mouse voice, just like, "Hoo-hoo, land bastard."
Oh, you done been naughty, Doctor.
Completely lost track.
Do you know, in a way, that would kind of be creepier if they were stood there and I was like, oh, I'm expecting like a land bastard, and it's a ho ho. I probably would be kind of creeped out. I'll be honest, you know, because I wouldn't expect it, you know.
One of these days we're going to get that. We're going to get some proper, super scary looking monster, and then they're just going to give them a stupid ass voice just to throw us off. Just like, I was not expecting that.
I mean, we have that in real life. It's Mr. Blobby. So.
Oh my God, I had so much fun because my missus is Filipino, so she has never been subjected to the horror that is Mr. Blobby. So I just showed her random clips and she was horrified, thinking this was for kids. It was like, I don't think it was for any sane person, but we had it.
Do you remember the show? Tangent now completely.
Do you remember
the show? Do you remember Get Your Own Back?
Yeah.
Where they'd have a parent on or something.
I tried to sign up for that.
Lowered down.
Yeah.
Do you remember they did one time where they had Mr. Blobby?
No.
And Mr. Blobby got put in the gunge.
No, I've not seen that. That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. Check it out.
Okay. I've got to do that. Oh, okay. Back to horror.
Back to horror.
Yes.
Yes.
So, you know, sea devils, they're great, you know, because they've got that uncanny valley aspect to them because they're quite monstrous, but they still have that very human aspect because they're humanoid. But there was something that they brought to the table during their first appearance, another type of horror that I want to bring up, and that is abstract horror. How so, you may ask? Well, for many, the sea devils made audiences afraid to go into the ocean. This idea that these monsters were going to come out and get you from there. And before you say, the sea devils predate Jaws by 3 years. Which, now that is the ultimate... be scared of the water monster, but
yeah. I mean, like, because I can remember like first seeing Jaws, and I was scared to go in the water. I was, you know, I kind of am now, just because I don't trust the fucking ocean.
Yeah,
I don't trust what's in it. You know, I know somewhere down there Cthulhu's hiding. I know he is.
I mean, just look at random photos of all the shit that's down there, and you're just like. Hell, it's a cosmic horror.
Like we know more about space than we do about the ocean.
That's insane.
Like,
that's absolutely insane.
That scares me. You know, like, I'm just saying, there's a motherfucking Kraken down there. There's a Leviathan. There's Cthulhu's hiding down there. I'm telling you now. So,
I mean, it's gonna go one of two ways. Either we get enslaved as like zombies and just have no control of our minds and we just go all mad, or we open up a rift to Pacific Rim and we just have to create like our own massive giant mechs and everything, which...
Oh, fuck, that sounds metal.
I know.
Come on.
It's like...
Let's pilot our Jaegers.
Is that the worst or the best the apocalypse would be in? I do not know the honest answer to that.
I can think of worse.
Yeah.
I think Attack on Titan is probably worse, to be honest.
Yeah, no, 100%.
I've always said, if I woke up in a, you know, if I ever woke up in an anime world, I want to be Pokemon, I want to be Dragon Ball, You know, if I woke up on Attack on Titan, I'm just killing myself there. I'm like, fuck this shit.
Oh, dude, that's the isekai fantasy done. That you're just like, fuck this shit.
Yeah, sorry, I'll try. You know, I'll try it on my next go. Like, you know, no thanks. You know, I will quite happily take something else to, you know, I will take anything. Just don't give me Attack on Titan. No.
I'm trying to think of worse off the top of my head, and I'm sure there was worse out there, but...
Oh, Berserk. Wake up in Berserk. Oh. Fuck.
Oh, shit. Now that's a Sophie's choice right there. Like... Oh,
Anyway, yes. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
Yes.
And I think as well, it's important to note there were instances of horror all through even the Troughton era. You know, we're into Pertwee now.
Mm.
But, you know, you look at the Troughton era, you had stuff like the Macra, who are a very, you know, scary crab monster, you know. And you have the theory, and that is it's the fascism. Because I know you haven't seen the Macra Terror, Robin.
No, not yet.
But it's, let me pitch it to you now.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1984 with giant space crabs.
Ah. Okay.
So, you know, do you know anything about the Macra, Robin?
As much as I...
Well, of course you know, because Macra did not exist. Macra are not real. And that's, again, that's the thing of it coming through there. It's the fascism. It's the, no, we control what you understand. We control... your narrative, we control the information you get. We say there's no such thing as these creatures, despite the fact you've just seen them out there.
Mm.
It's that, again, it's Orwellian. It's the, you know, it's Oceana and I can't remember the other one in fucking 1984, but it's we control this. And, you know, if history changes because we said it changes, no, it was always like this. Which in itself is very, you know, again, the fascism of it is terrifying, isn't it?
It sounds to me, just from that example, that sounds like a much better take on that controlling the media story than The Long Game, which I've recently rewatched. And it's not as terrible as I remember it being, but
yeah,
it's not.
There's good stuff in it. Simon Pegg is probably the best bit, to be honest, in it. But it's, in my mind, it's the only stinker of series one. So
it's, the thing is, it's not that it's a bad episode. It's just like, oh, hey guys, shocking revelation here. The news controls the media. Yeah, we know that this is public knowledge. It's like,
and I think as well, you know, going back to the Patrick Troughton era, had stuff like the Great... No, absolutely fine. You had also had, you know, the Yeti and the Great Intelligence who, you know, the Yeti, you know, I talk about that because obviously recently we've had the Abominable Snowmen come out on, you know, the animated reconstruction. And there are elements of that of which are definitely leaning into horror in Doctor Who, you know, and that's more of a horror in the sense of like a hyper intelligent otherworldly force coming in, you know, a demon in a sense, really. Anyway, we're forgetting the 60s, forgetting Troughton, forgetting that we've moved on to Pertwee era, haven't we?
Definitely. I mean, are we continuing in our 70s, 80s, or do we hop back into the TARDIS?
Let's keep going in the 70s, 80s, you know, because you're right. And there's definitely a trend of, I feel like there's a trend of stuff becoming less scary.
Mm. You know, people really get desensitized and monsters. I mean, again, I love a good monster, but unless you had the budget to make it look really good, most people are like, actually, the thing that scares me now are other people, you know, or these humanoid people that is going to invade your house or invade your dreams.
Well, especially for us after, you know, several lockdowns, the scariest thing in the world to me is other people. I'm like, get away from me. You know.
I mean, dude, now we've all been so in tuned to the moment someone coughs and everyone just instinctively turns or something. Like, that is, I mean, it's less so now, but at the start of COVID, that was just so prominent. You just You couldn't help yourself.
You know, I'll say this now. Before, I'd watch a zombie film and be like, how could they conceal that they've been bitten all this time? And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense completely.
Yeah, makes sense. That happened. Yeah. And I think as well, like, you know, there are certainly still scary stories, definitely, in Doctor Who. Like, you know, I think of, like, I was about to say Creature from the Pit, but that's scary for a different reason. Very, very different reason. And, you know, there's, you know, Genesis of the Daleks is one that you could probably argue is quite scary as well, because you have, again, the fascism, you also have Davros, who comes in as quite a scary figure, quite a grotesque figure to look at as well, you know. And, yeah. But then, like you say, you start getting very, very humanoid monsters, you know. I'm thinking of, like, the robots of death, or the humanoid robots, you know. And
yeah.
I'll be honest, robots really aren't that scary to me. So,
I've never found robots to be particularly scary, unless the one exception in my mind is Five Nights at Freddy's, and that's just because it's mostly just jump scare factor, and there is something sort of hidden about them.
It's like, if it's, because it's just a machine, isn't it? And that doesn't quite seem as scary as something having, like, a conscience, or having a, something, there's something, you know, almost human about it, or just something you can, I don't know.
The Cybermen, early Cybermen are great because you know that they've had their humanity taken. You know that they used to
and the have voice. The voice is the scariest. We have been things like this. We used to be like you. Like, it's.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much better than when they're just like, delete. Or you will become like us. Like,
is this the concept of madness? It is.
And of course, excellent.
just the random little clips that I see of them where I'm like, did they still look cool? But it's just the voice. Yeah,
it's fucking pits, isn't it? Yeah. it's Creature from the Pit, isn't it?
Oh, and dude, we haven't even brought up, like, one of the other instances of the Cybermen being scary is when they started to invade London, much like the Daleks did, coming out the sewers.
Yeah, that in the invasion, of course. And before that, Tomb of the Cybermen, when they come out of... Oh, yeah, that imagery is quite scary as well.
Great.
Yeah.
That kind of very metamorphous, kind of being born type imagery, but it being these mechanical beings. Oh, I've only seen clips of that, but I want to watch that episode. That's kind of high up there on my to-watch list.
It's a good one. Tomb of the Cybermen. So good. Definitely recommend it, yeah.
Oh, 100%. Like, I'm trying to think, like, because 70s and 80s, they do have some great
They do, other you know, examples. Even, you know, and I feel like horror sort of takes a backseat a bit, you know. Like, there's still scary stuff, but it's not quite there so much. Until to maybe, you know, even through the, you know, through the Davison and the, you know, the Colin Baker years, you get to McCoy and you have this darker Doctor. And you start to see that horror coming through a bit more, especially as well because they're trying to tune into the political, you know, climate at the time. You know, Thatcher's in her reign of power there. You know, Andrew Cartmell, who was... Script editor, when he took on the job, they said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to bring down the government. So you start seeing these much more politically, you know, focused scripts, these politically motivated scripts. You look at, you know, Remembrance of the Daleks, which isn't a horror episode, but they're talking about, you know, Daleks having this idea of, you know, purity, and how this other group of Daleks are, you know, should be destroyed because they're a different race to them.
Oh, this is the thing. Horror's not just about being jump scare and scary. It's also horror as a concept, horror as something like that, which is an absolute horrible thing. Exactly.
Yeah, and at the time, there's a massive problem with racism in the UK. And, you know, let's face it, there still is. There still is, you know? So it's tying into that there, and that's something which is scary in itself, that people can just dehumanize people to that based on something as stupid as the color of their skin or where they come from, you know?
It's ridiculous.
That's scary in my head, that people can be like that, you know? But then, you know, you look at, if you get stuff like the Happiness Patrol as well, which is, again, you have a Margaret Thatcher insert there, you know? You have this darker Doctor who's manipulating the scenes behind things. You get stuff like Ghostlight, which is very much creepy, very much creepy. And, of course, the Curse of Fenric as well, which is my absolute favourite classic Who story. Which is just absolutely gorgeous. And I'll get you to watch it sometime, Robin. You know, but it is, you know, and it ties into it because you have vampires, you have elder gods,
really?
You have a lot of creepy stuff, you have possessions, and it's got what I think is one of the best cliffhangers in all Doctor Who, where this character who's been in a wheelchair all this time, this professor, he is knocked out of the wheelchair, and then the doctor's looking one way, and then he stands up. This character somehow suddenly has the ability of his legs, and he opened up his eyes, and they're glowing. And he goes, "And so we play the contest again, Time Lord."
Oh, very nice.
So good.
I mean, Jack, you've come up with a fantastic list of things there, but you missed the most scariest thing of all during this time, that being the Candyman.
I thought you were going to say the Macra, and I was about to throw a shoe at you. Yeah, Candyman is scary, because he leans into that Mr. Blobby area of scary. Definitely, you know.
Now here's my hot topic for you tonight, Jack. Who would win in a fight, Mr. Blobby or the Candyman?
Oh, Candyman is easily destroyed by Mr. Blobby. Candyman is, Blobby comes straight in, just, you know, Candyman tries to have this banter with him and what have you, you know, he's trying to feed on his emotions, but Blobby is just a force of nature. Blobby is just Blobby, and Candyman's like, I'm trying to, you know, Blobby, Blobby, and then Candyman is just, he's like, get away from me, Blobby,
Blobby. And I just feel as like Candyman's trying to do his powers on him, and it's just like, no, Mr. Blobby is an eldritch horror. You try and do that on him, you go mad.
You know what? I had an idea for a story one time.
Yeah.
I'll completely off topic here. Well, the 12th Doctor lands in Teletubby Land. Okay. But it's post after the show and everything's gone to shit and the Teletubbies are fucking like eldritch horror. And it's revealed they're actually fucking elder gods. And like,
oh my god.
Yeah.
This is just going into SCP territory right here. You know?
Yeah, creepypasta coming out. Do you know what? I forgot to mention something as well in the Tom Baker era, actually, seeing as we're jumping through time and space. But there's a, you know, because you have a lot of gothic stories, especially in the Hinchcliffe era. But then you also have a really sort of less scary, but lean into horror itself, a gothic. So you have State of Decay, which is when vampires are properly introduced into Doctor Who. And not just that, they're made intrinsically part of the Doctor Who lore, in that vampires are, I feel like I'm dropping a cannon buster here. Vampires are like the ultimate, like, early enemy of Time Lords. So much so,
that's so awesome.
And it is so much so that Time Lords are sort of programmed in their head to automatically try to destroy vampires when they see them.
Oh my god, that is amazing! And now I'm just thinking, why the hell have we not had that featured more in Doctor Who lore?
You just gotta go to Big Finish in the books, mate. Because Project Twilight and other stuff like that, like, oh, beautiful, beautiful stories. still.
Project Twilight, is that where he goes around killing like Edmund or?
No.
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 Sadly not.
No.
No.
Unfortunately not, no.
No.
But it is, it's vampires and it's, you know. And that's, you know. You know what, mate? Take us in the TARDIS. Go on.
Yeah.
You take us on this amazing adventure again. Go on.
Ah, oh, beautiful. Well, I'm afraid it's time to go back into modern times, it is, Jack. Now, a lot of horror was, of course, made during the 90s and 2000s, but out of all the types of horror we have discussed, we can really begin to pinpoint that abstract horror was becoming the real slasher of horror movie killers. While gore fests like Saw were beginning to emerge for the sake of pure murder porn, abstract horror, as in horror that picks a concept and really delves deep into a chosen theme, has really found its place in both modern day movies and even TV. Just look at anthology stories as seen in both Black Mirror and Love, Death and Robots.
Such a good show.
Yeah, amazing. I'm so glad you convinced me to love and watch Love, Death and Robots, which amazing stories, and oh, some of them have like put shivers up my spines.
You know what? I've said it and I'll say it again. Doctor Who was crying out for an anthology series like that.
Oh, it is.
You know? And especially, you know, imagine if they did a few like Treehouse of Horror episodes for Doctor Who for it, you know?
I know what you mean by that, but all I'm imagining is just all the Treehouse of Horror episodes and just replacing the cast with just different doctors and companions. It's just...
It's good, you know? Mm. So my favourite Simpsons episodes are Treehouse of Horror episodes. So.
I every single year, I always sit down and I watch a good few of them. I do just... I have to, just... Especially the classic ones, like...
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of one of my favorite ones is The Shining. Love The Shining.
Oh yeah,
The Shining is so good.
I love the one where they get the haunted mansion, and it's like at the end of that, it's like, you forgot to tell me that this place was haunted. Yes, you did. Uh huh. Yeah, good night. What is it, Homer? Oh, he's only mentioned it like 2 or 5 times.
doesn't the house kill itself rather than have to be condemned? Like it commits suicide instead of having to deal with them anymore.
And the moment you were talking about Doctor Who and Treehouse of Horror, I just imagined it being like Mickey trying to live in the house and the house just being like, live with Mickey. Whatever choice do I have? And it just implodes. It just
if we could take Mickey with him, that'd be great as well. Mm. Noel Clark. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. We're back at modern times now, or I imagine around 2005, you know. And obviously, in between them, we've had Doctor Who stories all the way through. We've had books. But we've also had Doctor Who exploring a new medium in that time.
Mm.
It's been an audio medium. It's over at Big Finish. And, I mean, Robin, the Holy Terror, Night Thoughts, you know?
Yes.
Just the horror between those and how, you know, even Chimes of Midnight is horror as well, you know, beautifully, you know, even if it is a Christmas listen for me, which I do every year.
Dude, it doesn't matter if it's Christmas, it's still horror.
I think what's so great about the Holy Terror in particular, which I will always bow down, and I'll say it again a million times, it's my favourite Big Finish story ever. It's my absolute favourite, you know, and Robert Sherman will always be my favourite Doctor Who writer for that alone. Because it starts off as a comedy, doesn't it?
Yeah. It really does.
It lures you into this false sense of security, and by the time you hit part three, you realise, and Rob Sherman said the same thing himself, he ran out of jokes. So he went, all right then, I'll make it fucking... And oh my God, it's some of the scariest Doctor Who, and the voice they give that monster. Jesus Christ.
There's something so unnerving as well about people being so nice when terrible things are going on. Just like they've just seen somebody die in such a horrific way. I don't even want to spoil like some of the deaths because they're just so, they're kind of so darkly humoured that they're both funny, but they're also like, ooh, yeah, things are beginning to happen. The paint is peeling and the horror underneath is beginning to show.
Totally, yeah. And then we spoke about this last year for we spoke about the Holy Terror last year for Halloween special with Mr. TARDIS when he was on. And it was, we were all, you know, quite captivated by that one, you know? So, yeah. Okay,
but
go ahead,
so
go ahead,
you,
mate.
You can. So I'm glad you brought that up because Big Finish as well, beautiful stuff, using our imaginations to fill in the blanks of horror. Our imagination can scare us far more than an image. You could come up with an amazing idea for a monster, but if someone draws or designs it or gives it the budget of £5 and it just looks terrible, it loses all that horror.
Stop dragging on the fucking macro, all right? It's okay. It's not that bad.
See, I was just thinking about the killer inflatable chair, you know,
or the chicken man that Omega has in our community. Oh my god, I just realized you don't even know about the chicken man.
I've not heard of this. What the fuck is the chicken
man? Yeah, the chicken man. The chicken man in Arkham Infinity. And, you know, I mean, wow, yeah.
I have to hold the podcast while I look up Doctor Who
Arkham Infinity. No, it's not a Batman crossover again. Don't worry. Arkham Infinity, there's a chicken man. Hang on. This is, yeah, he's literally pausing the podcast to do this now. Do you see the chicken man? Do you see the chicken
man? Yeah, I see that funky chicken.
There's a really good Sam's going to kill me for it, but you know, because I'm here saying how good his stuff is again, which I know he finds very uncomfortable, but there's a really good Broke Canon I could send your way where Sam talks all about the chicken man. So.
Please send me his discussions about walking, talking dandos there.
Yeah, he is finger-licking good.
Mm. Well, that's a...
Oh, God, that sounded weird. That sounded worse than it did. Oh, my God.
That's Jack's special pass on the chicken man.
Chicken run. Chicken run. Chicken
Now we're just saying special pass to movies like Chicken Run. Like, ooh, I mean, I do like chickens, but apple pie is my favourite. So it's like completely off topic.
What is happening? I saw my whole life flash from my eyes. It's really boring. That's the only thing I can remember from Chicken Run.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. Check it around, yeah.
we've got a cosmic horror joining us tonight because we are mad as can be.
I mean, we always are, aren't we? Yeah. So, Big Finish, new, you know, like you say, yeah, it is. It's your brain filling in the gaps of the horror, isn't it? Mm. And it's, you know, it's why audio and books are so good for horror as well as films, because whereas a film is presented to you, I feel like you said, your mind is, your imagination can make the scariest stuff, you know,
and
genuinely.
You've already beat me to it. You have of all the examples I was going to give here, but New Who, like especially in 2000s, was beginning to explore abstract horror. And when we got the Weeping Angels in 2007 with Blink, appropriately titled, like if that was just a movie titled Blink, that conjures up so many different thoughts to the imagination. It does as an episode. And not only is it a familiar horror of, oh, this is a graveyard statue or like a statue you'd see on like a castle or something, and then you make it, oh, when you're not looking at it, it moves and it's gonna get you. And that idea of it's going to get you, that is so intrinsically terrifying. And then putting new spins on the horror, given rules, that inherently, I feel, really brings in a lot of horror. Absolutely.
And what's great about it is that they just, that Moffat, and, you know, some people say that the way Angel's got worse of each appearance. I don't think that. I think they just, you know, they stay good all that time, you know. Mm. But he built on it, didn't he? Like, you know, you very much just had, oh, don't blink in Blink. And then when they were brought back for Flesh and Stone and...
Like Flux?
Time of the Angels, is it? Yeah, Time of the Angels. Where you have, you know, you have the added thing of them, you know, like, I'm not going to send you back in time. They're just going to break your neck and use your voice. And you know, you have the brilliant thing now, which again is built on in Flux in Village of the Angels, you know, and every Doctor Who fan now who looks at a picture of a wicked angel has a pang of fear now, because the image of an angel in itself becomes an angel.
Oh, that's amazing. And the fact that they're just like, oh, that's simple. We'll just burn this, then, and it's just into something even worse.
Exactly. Again, how it's set up there in series 5, and how it pays off then in series 13 with it being that again. Because on what is, I think, what's so great about Village of the Angels, because it is, it's a great horror episode, you know. But it's what's so wonderful about it is it's. Because we know how terrifying one weeping angel is, when it's just swarms and swarms and swarms of them, and how they're talking through the TV and talking through this, and like, you know, and like you say, with, you know, the drawing, and then it catches on fire. It's like, oh, put it on fire. Oh shit, it's so much worse.
It's worse. It's such a
Village Angel, and, you know, Village Angel is such a brilliant episode. It is for horror as well. Like, you know, you even have, you know, the amazing scene where they try and get out through Jericho's, you know, secret basement bit.
Oh,
and they're coming through the fucking walls, you know? And, you know, all they have to try and do is just not blink. But then, you know, Jericho gets a bit of dust in his eye and blinks then. And it's like, oh, it's so, so good. You know, you have... And I think what's great about that one is as well that you genuinely fear for the characters as well. Because, you know...
Yes.
You... instantly get this love and a connection to Press Jericho, and especially as well, like, he has that wonderful speech with the angel which he's looking at, which is just there, and, you know, he talks about how fighting in the war and what have you, and you know, and fascism and fighting against things, and how it, and then he has that amazing line where he looks at the angel, so, and I will, what, you know, I will look at you, and that is my power over you. And time away from horror, but still,
it's beautiful stuff. And dude, I love that New Who explores these things, like, as you said, shadows. Let's make something that as a child you are just inherently quite scared of the dark, you're scared of what you can't see. And they not only did Don't Blink, we also got other themes like Don't Forget, Don't Breathe, and Don't Think. And it's
and then just... also, and then of course, you know, series 4, you know, each, you know, I used to love it back in the day when they had a through line in each series. Like, you know, in series 1 it was Bad Wolf, then it was Torchwood, then it was Harold Saxon, wasn't it? Series 4 we had two, we had Rose appearing on things, but we also had just the subtle horror of there's something on your back.
Oh yeah.
And he, just saying it then just gave me chills, genuinely, because it is such an unsettling thought about, like, what does that mean? What is it? And it's, oh, yeah, I am, sorry, I'm literally getting chills now because I'm like, oh.
No, you know. And it's great because you have put down some of these great things. We've gone from what's the fear and what's the horror, sorry, in 60s Doctor Who. Oh, well, it's a giant ant. And it's really scary because it's a giant ant. You know, yeah, cool. And what's our whole...
Thank you, George Lucas.
And it's like, well, what's our modern day horror? Well, you see that shadow over there? Yeah, it's going to have, like, kind of like these piranha creatures that are going to turn you into a skeleton, and then you're going to say like the last thing that you said, and it's like,
I just fuck it. I have this image of Russell D. Davis sat there, just Stephen Moffat's there in the room. Russell's just there reading a script, and he just gets to it, and he goes, "Stephen, the fuck." Like, Jesus Christ, Stephen. and then Stephen reads the script at midnight, and he's like, Jesus Christ, Russell. Because, I mean, if we're going to talk about Who, yes, I know we spoke about Empty Child a bunch and what have you before anyway, and that was sort of obviously a very scary episode. In my mind, the scariest episode of Doctor Who is also one of the cheapest episodes ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Midnight.
We keep bringing it up because it's so goddamn good.
It's my favourite 10th Doctor episode. It is.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Absolutely love it.
And because it is, there are so many levels of it. It's fear of the unknown. It's fear of paranoia. It's fear of mob mentality. You know, there's so much you can, you know, go into it there, and it explores so many different things. I think you can look at that and see inspiration on horror films in general anyway. Like, you know, you have so many, like, you know, budget horror films now, but are still effective in what they do because it's just a simple concept. I think of films like It Follows, which, let's face it, it's probably a low budget film, but it's fucking terrifying, you know, in what it is. And it's, you know, that's, I'll be honest, an episode like It Follows would be great in Doctor Who. Kind of there a little bit in, I'd say, like, maybe it's already there a little bit in Mummy on the Orient Express, but in a much less capacity.
Yeah.
Because Mummy on the Orient Express, I wouldn't necessarily call it a scary episode. You know, it's more Agatha Christie than it is horror, which, you know, obviously, I know Agatha Christie would lean into a horror as well, but it's much more about the actual mystery itself, isn't it, than the than the facts.
I'd agree
scary.
With that. Yeah.
Then, oh, scary mummy. Yeah.
Like, the mummy's scary looking, but definitely the Agatha Christie part of things takes over that. And, you know, while I will say there are inherently scary parts in Doctor Who, I wouldn't say every single Doctor Who episode is scary, much like that original Agatha Christie episode with the giant bees.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that the giant bees are scary.
But that is all the same, you know. Don't get me wrong. Hate the fucking writer. Hate the writer of Unicorn and the Wasp. But fucking hate Gareth Roberts. I do. I'll say it there. But it's a fun episode.
That's all right.
You know? Yeah. It's a fun episode, you know, but it's not scary. No, you're right, you know, and a lot of episodes like that. But I feel like something like Flatline in Series 8 is I would say that the horror in that dials up as well, because you have this unknown creature coming from, you know, an alternate world or a different dimension coming through, and you know, you have these bits of, you know, you see, you know, they basically use the bodies of people or the image of people in this squashed 2D flat version, you know. And then, you know, you have other bits where it's just like, oh, that is the person we're looking for. That's the person that's missing. They're there on the wall, but it's their entire nerve system, and they're stuck on, like, Flatline is such a good episode, and it really blends into that, you know. And you also have the horror in the sense that the Doctor is stuck in the TARDIS, you know, in this shrinking TARDIS. He's stuck in it, and Clara is there having to deal with it, you know really compounding that arc of her of you know, her trying to be more like the Doctor, which obviously is ultimately her undoing. And great episode, and really blends into that horror as well.
I think we have, it was kind of seen in the 70s and 80s where people were beginning to get a bit more desensitized to the horrors of, oh no, it's creature from outer space. And you know, horror did need to evolve, and so did the show, and I think it did so amazingly. And I think New Who is doing the exact same thing. yes, we can still have terrifying creatures which are scary monsters, but I think we are getting to a point now where we are exploring more abstract or familiar concepts of horror. Mm-hmm. And I think that is kind of the future of Doctor mm-hmm. Who. I think these shows like Love, Death and Robots and Black Mirror are so prominent because they really make you think about the horror involved. And when it makes you think, you almost begin to make it even more scary when you think about it, which I think mm-hmm. is the idealness of like a good true horror. Even like director Jordan Peele, he does some amazing horrors with the various titles that he yeah. does, and those are very kind of a mixtures of genres and concepts, and it's just like, it's very exciting times, because I think rather than it being just here's something trying to kill you, it's now like, okay, there's something trying to kill you, but it's got a really creative gimmick and it makes you really think. Or
yeah, yeah. And even it can be, it can even just be like situational horror rather than it just being a monster.
Mm.
The situation itself can be terrifying.
Well, Midnight, you know, as you just said, that you know? In itself is a great example that you are stuck, and it's quite possible that you are stuck with the thing that is threatening you. Oh, mate, like, talking about all these things, I want to go on a Doctor Who horror binge now.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, you're going to find it in a lot of episodes, because there is going to be a intrinsic thing about it, you know, there is that, you know, and I, here's me, right, okay, I'm going to, long-time listeners will know this one, so here we go again. Doctor Who is a prism. And you shine a light through that prism and you get all these sunbeams off there. You get your comedy episode, you get your period drama episode, you get your horror episodes. And sometimes those beams intertwine. And you'll get, you know, comedy within the horror. You'll get, you know, period drama within the horror. You get this, you get that. But it's intrinsically there. It's linked to Doctor Who. And I think if we ever got a day without horror, that being scary, it's not the same show anymore.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with you. I think horror is so entwined in Doctor Who, like back in, all the way back to when our parents first watched Doctor Who, a lot of people will say, well, what is Doctor Who to you? And a lot of them will joke about saying, well, I hid behind the sofa because I was scared of it.
Yeah.
And when I, at a younger age, watched the Gas Mask Children for the first time.
Oh, empty child, yeah.
I wasn't behind the sofa, but as someone watching that, I was like, ooh, this is scary. And my cousin, who was even younger than me, he couldn't even watch that episode. He was loving Doctor Who, but that was his experience of having to be out of the room for that. And it's just, it's brilliant how these things can inherently come back and keep coming back, this kind of horror Doctor Who. I don't want to lose it ever.
And I think it's so great because then you can have stuff like, you can, and I know you've not seen it, but you can have Torchwood as well, which can explore more adult horror. You know, which, God hoping we sometime, you know, hopefully get Torchwood back at some point in some form or a similar show for a more adult audience for Doctor Who. Because you can, you know, let's face it, you're never going to have gore in Doctor Who. And I'm not really a big fan of gore in horror anyway. It makes me feel more sick than upset. Or more, it makes you feel more sick than afraid, but it's still there as a staple of horror, and you're going to explore that more in something like Torchwood, which has that, you know, Asian nightmare, which is exactly why you didn't watch it when it first came on.
Look, young me didn't like blood, so one of the very first scenes being a guy getting his neck ripped open by a monster was like, yeah, I'm probably going to sit this one out as my blood just drains from my face and I just look pale as a ghost.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Fuck this shit, I'm out. Yeah.
Oh, but Mate, I think the series has truly evolved with the times, and it makes me excited to see what else we can get. Like, come on, mate. Like, if they ever do announce, like, an anthology series or something where they can really delve even more into these aspects of horror, because people keep coming up with new ideas of horror. It is a well that I think will never go dry.
Yeah. And you know what? It's something which, in the fan community, in terms of fan creations and fan fiction, it's explored really well. I mean, look at what Rory does with Dark Days. Yeah. He has a fourth Doctor, Michael Myers crossover, doesn't he?
I love that so much.
You know?
Absolutely, I love that.
She's so good. You have Dom G. Martin's Doctor Who Remnant series, which episodes of that really lean into that horror. I mean, hell, you have one episode where the Rani summons fucking a Pinhead, you know? And which is just amazing, you know? And, you know, you have the Cybermen episodes as well, which are terrifying. And it's really, you know, fantastic stuff, you know? Really looking forward to Series 2 as well, which is coming out soon. So, yeah. Yeah, I feel like with Russell coming back as well to it, I think we can definitely expect to see horror in some sense in Doctor Who going forward, whether it be in terms of social commentary horror, in terms of being like, fuck, this is so relevant, you know, and certainly which is something present in his work since leaving Doctor Who. Or whether it just be fucking spooky monsters, you know, or spooky situations.
We need to come up with a bingo card of what random object or thing is he going to try and make scary, you know?
That's a tough one.
That is, because it's just really like, tough. I'm looking around me right now and it's like, record player, mobile phone. There we go. Mobile phone, you make that scary. I know it's been done in other things, but I
oh yeah, look at the Lonely Assassins. That phone was definitely scary when I was playing that game.
God damn, yeah, that
one fucking jump scare. That one jump scare. Oh my god.
I mean, I know it's out on Switch and the like, but it's like, no, you download it on your phone. You play it on phone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I had to. I was telling one of my friends that actually, because there was a bundle or something on something. He was like, "Oh, okay, here." I was like, "No, don't." I was like, "Don't. You gotta have headphones. You gotta play it on the phone. You gotta do it properly. You gotta do it like that." Because my god,
I want there to be more. You know, it'd be great actually if they release an anthology Doctor Who horror game, like. They just released chapters.
Ooh, okay.
And every chapter was like a different type of horror or something. That would be really cool.
You know, it'd be really cool to see them take influence from horror films as well, you know, because I think, you know, that can really, what works really well in Doctor Who when they do take a bit of influence there, and obviously Doctor Who has influenced other things as well. So, it could be really interesting to see that, you know, like, you know, let's face it, the found footage was a massive staple of the horror industry for a while. I'm really happy that that fucking died out, to be honest, because it got a bit too much at one point, you know, at a certain point when every horror film coming out was found footage, you know, that came, you know, that's a massive staple of horror, you know, and it came into Doctor Who when we had Sleep No More, which is an episode people don't really like. I think it's okay, but, and it's certainly not horror. It's not a scary episode, really. But still, you know, you could apply that and make it kind of scary. And I definitely think I'd love to see Shooty Gatwa put in some situations coming up now, which are going to be quite scary.
I am so excited to see what this actor brings to the table. I think Jodie, she has done a wonderful job. I think she's always been a brilliant actress. But there's always that inherent kind of excitement about a new Who. And you know what? I think I'm getting to the point now when Jodie goes. While I have been quite open to the fact that I've not always been the biggest fan of the episodes, that has never affected my enjoyment of the actress's work or the passion that she brings to the table.
I think we can both agree that Jodie from day one was super. Mm. But, you know, it's one of those ones, isn't it? You know, I mean, Robin, going forward, in terms of turning forward for Doctor Who, we're going to have the scariest creature in all Doctor Who. We're going to have Beat the Meep coming up in an episode, aren't we?
Fucking hell. Okay, guys, who had Beat the Meep on their bingo card? Seriously, who had him?
No one had Beat the Meep. I remember that day of people just going, is that fucking Beat the Meep? God.
I cannot wait to see what they do. I mean, again, it's one, you know, that kind of most people are like, don't tell me anything, I don't want to be spoiled. Whereas in current Doctor Who, like all the footage being shown and revealed online, you're kind of like, ooh, is that, and could that be, and could that link to, and it's like, ooh, it's.
Here's the thing. Russell is a genius when it comes to marketing. Mm. You know, and I definitely think their marketing team is probably doing a bit better than maybe previous marketing teams. But hey, let's not talk about that, because I'm not a marketing expert. You know, a lot of people in the Doctor Who community on Twitter certainly want to say they're a marketing expert, but I'm not. But let's tell you what, Robin, let's finish this chat about Doctor Who Horror. What would you like to see in the future from who in terms of horror?
Crikey, that is a big one, because I went so deep into my mini essay here of making sure I got all these points about different dates and times. I never actually thought about what I wanted. I guess I want to see more abstract horrors. I want to see more kind of, give me a concept and have that be the basis of the episode. Let it be, okay, you've given me the don't feed it after midnight motif type thing. Now let's see how they fuck it up, or let's see what modern day factors we can put in. Like, imagine if they did an episode that was clearly based on like COVID or their equivalent of it. Like, we've gone through that. That is inherently quite scary in itself. And I bet you, if not now, in the future, we will get something that mimics that, because I think that's so inherently in us.
Do you know what? Do you know what's funny? We had that in a way before. We had that pre-COVID. We had Praxeus, which felt like it was too soon before COVID even started.
Yeah,
you know. Which, and that's, you know, there's definitely horror in that.
Jack, I need to pass the mic to you. But did you have like a answer? Because that's a good question.
For me, I dial it into three things. And it's the three biggest monsters in Doctor Who. Okay. I want to make the Daleks scary again.
Yeah.
So I want to actually have an episode like, and I don't want to be just retreading ground, because I feel like they already retreaded ground with Resolution in terms of Dalek. And I say that liking Resolution. But I want a story where you really feel the fear for these Daleks. You know, little score, darkly lit corridors. I just have this image of just, and I feel bad, it's basically the corridor scene the corridor scene from Rogue One, but with a Dalek. And rather than it being the lightsaber that ignites, it's just, you just hear the Dalek moving down, and then just the, and you can't see anything, and then the camera's just looking there, and you just hear it, and it's going down different ways. And then before they realise, behind one of them, the blue eye just blinks like open like that, and it just goes into it like that. You know, same. You know, not saying similar thing with Cybermen, but Here's the one I really want them to dial into in terms of horror. Okay? Not Daleks, not Cybermen, because they should be scary anyway. Make the Master scary.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good pull.
Don't make it some cartoony villain chewing the scenery. Don't make it, you know, this character that we love or love to hate. Make it someone we are terrified of. You know, I'll be honest, Robin. Someone like the War Master, for example, from over at Big Finish, scares me.
Oh, you keep bigging up the War Master, you know? And I want to listen to him.
Oh my god, so good stuff, you know. So, and with each box set I listen to, it makes the snippet we get of him in Utopia even better. Oh, it makes it so satisfying. So, yeah, and he is. It's. That's what I want, you know. And it's not a bash on Sim. It's not a bash on Gomez. Oh, it's not a bash on Dwan. I think I love them all. I think they're great masters. But I want a cold, calculated killer. He'll kill you with a smile on his face.
That's a really good choice. And I wish I had a solid answer myself. In fact, I think this is a question that we should ask our audience as well, because I think that was a stellar question.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, you know, check it up on the Twitter, and I'll put it on the Spotify as well. What do you want to see in terms of horror in Doctor Who? What do you want Doctor Who to give you in terms of horror in the future?
Oh, yeah. That beautiful conversation there. And, whew, some tingles down my spine.
Yeah, it's great, you know. And I'll be honest, I came into this less prepared than Robin, but the way that you were talking about it, you got me thinking, you got my brain going so that I could organically respond to what you were saying there, mate. So thank you so much, really.
No, it's been chat, good stuff. Genuinely, I'm passionate about Halloween, and I love my monsters, so it's just like, yeah, let's do this. And oh, good stuff. And now I am looking forward to my reward. I am of the little cannon buster.
Oh, you want a cannon buster, do you? You want a trap or a treat?
That is a good little segue, yes.
Hey, Robin. Halloween! Trick or treat! Oh, that's the one bit in Halloween Apocalypse I don't like. It just feels a bit cringe. Anyway, okay, so I'm actually going to talk to you about an episode we've already spoken about today, Robin. And it's only a quick cannabis tonight. It's just a cheeky little morsel. It's just a wafer thin mint. Okay. So, you know what Mummy on the Orient Express? Okay. So, the thing about it is, Robin, that, you know, it feels like a pretty high-paced episode. It feels like you're, you know, just getting through things. It's happening. The Doctor's obviously, you know, had this, trying to stop the countdown for this foretold, which kills in 66 seconds, isn't it, you know? And it's trying to, you know, he's trying to get through, and it's high-paced, and he has, and there are multiple victims, what have you, in it. The Doctor's writing letters to Agatha Christie whilst trying to solve the mystery.
I'm sorry, what? Are you bullshitting me right now?
Whilst... when he's not on screen, Capaldi's there writing letters to Agatha Christie about the investigation.
I'm sure he's got more bigger deals here, like trying to save lives, than writing a letter to one of his favourite authors.
Clara is locked in this vault, but I and the people are being killed by this terrible mummy. But I must write letters to Agatha Christie.
Oh, I'm sorry, Clara. I've got to send this quick Twitter. I can't do his voice to save my life.
I'm sorry, Clara. I have to send this tweet.
I like that.
Sorry, Clara. Let me just update my Facebook status.
It's a bridge. You know, actors have that when they do an accent. For me, to get into the Capaldi voice, I have to say,
I want someone now to fan edit that episode so that every time he enters or he's not off screen, you just cut to like a new little animated section of him just writing letters. Just
Agatha, let me tell you now about this mummy that I can't seem to beat.
Doctor, now of all times, why are you writing?
I need to let her know about it. All right, Clara.
Oh, fine. While you do that, I'll just make another souffle.
wrong version. How bad spray bottle fake fan. Isn't Battles of Fandom.
That was quite a nice tweet rather than a trick. Thank you very much, Jack. I hope you get yourself lots of nice, delicious candy to enjoy this Halloween.
I hope so too. And you know what? I hope everyone has a spookily spectacular Halloween and enjoys some Who and what have you. Just have a spectacular time. I have been Jack.
And I have been Robin.
And this has been an awful lot of running. A Doctor Who podcast, my children. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
Fucking hell, that was scary.
An Awful Lot of Running is an unofficial Doctor Who podcast. Intro music and outro music is by Hudson Music. Please, please, please go and check them out.